Hey guys, it's Tim here. Have you ever struggled with the income you make teaching music? Have you ever felt guilty teaching after school and on weekends and missing out on family dinners and activities during the week? Have you ever wondered if there was a way you could create income that didn't rely on your teaching? Well, I wanted you to be the first to know about a very special series of emails that I've started sharing this week. It's a short 4-part video package called Music Teacher Income Secrets. And in it, I've been unpacking the difficulties many of us face maintaining a sustainable income through private studio teaching. I've already released videos 1 and 2, and next week in the series, I'm going to be offering a solution that I've never shared before and that may be a perfect fit for you. If you haven't been getting these emails or you'd like to catch up on the series, then make sure you sign up now by going to timtopham.com/secrets.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Topham here again for another episode of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and this is Season 2, 2019, and we're up to episode number 166. And today we're talking all about another way that you might be able to bring in a little bit more income on the side of your piano teaching, and that is via playing piano for weddings. So if you are a good accompanist and you can do a bit of improv and you could play the kinds of music people look for at weddings, then this could be a fantastic opportunity for you. And my guest today has absolutely nailed this as a business concept, and she unveils everything you need to know today. If you haven't met me, my name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and you're listening to episode number 166. Today's show notes and full transcript are now available at timtopham.com/episode166. My guest today is an award-winning Toronto-based pianist, theory, and piano teacher. She has a Bachelor of Music degree in piano performance and an ARCT diploma in both piano performance and pedagogy. She provides a student-centered curriculum which focuses on developing musical literacy from beginning to advanced levels. While classically trained, she performs a wide variety of styles of music, including her own arrangements of jazz and the newest popular songs, and she's found great success and personal satisfaction using her music to help others celebrate important milestones. She's also an active member of the Ontario Registered Music Teachers Association, where she serves as president of the Central Toronto branch. She travels and presents at conferences on piano performance, pedagogy, and entrepreneurship a few times a year at locations throughout Canada and the USA. Welcome to the show, Liz Craig.
Thank you so much for having me, Tim.
It's an absolute pleasure. And you actually reached out to me with a good idea for the topic of this podcast, given your work in playing for weddings, which is what we're going to talk about in some depth today, and how that's moved from just a little bit of money on the side to actually, I think you're going to explain that that is becoming your main income source. So before we get stuck into all of the depth of that, tell us just a little bit about you as the piano teacher at the moment. How does your studio look? How many students are you teaching? That sort of thing.
Sure. So I'm located in Toronto, Canada. I first started out here working sort of part-time in a studio and then part-time with my own private students. And now I'm actually fully doing teaching my own private students. And what I do is I drive to their homes. So I do in-home all of my lessons now. I have about 30 students that I teach primarily Monday to Thursday evenings, and then I try to keep my weekends open for the wedding bookings.
Wow, that's 30 students that you travel to their houses.
That's correct. Now, some of them are siblings, right? Okay. So sometimes I'll have two or three at a home. So
right. Maybe 20 different locations that you would visit, let's say.
Yep, that sounds about right. Yep.
Wow, that's pretty busy. Mm-hmm. Because that time of the day too, certainly here, I imagine in Toronto as well, is busy. The cars are on the road. Everyone's doing the driving. So
yes, it's taken a few years. Yeah, it's taken a few years to sort of hone that and try not to spend too much time driving. So I try to schedule them strategically based on their preferences as well. It is a bit of a jigsaw puzzle to put together every year, the schedule. But so far, I've had a lot of success with it because many families want to have that service of me coming to their home. So I've really sort of capitalized on that And for the area that I'm in, a lot of the students are doing so many other activities. So if I can come to them, it just kind of relieves their schedule a little bit.
I understand. And while this is slightly off topic, do you are you able to charge enough money to cover the hours and fuel and maintenance?
I think so. Again, I'm lucky where I am. The neighborhood that I'm in is quite residential and quite well off, I would say. And they really value a high quality music education. And they value that I'm coming to their home. So I've been able to increase my rates every year and try to stay competitive that way.
Yeah, great. Oh, that's fantastic. I love hearing about how everyone does things differently. Some people won't teach after school. They'll just teach on weekends, and you're doing after school, not weekends. Some go to houses, some have the studio. I think it's just fascinating how we all choose to run our music businesses and make a success of it. So let's now talk about the wedding thing. So how on earth did you get into playing weddings? And I have to just say that whenever I talk to people about weddings and wedding events, I just think of the movie The Wedding Singer. I don't know if you've got any connections to that movie or if you felt like you've been in that movie.
You know what? I don't even think I've seen that movie, to admit now. I should. I really should. But just to get into sort of how I started, I also didn't really think of it as a career path when I started in music. I did my bachelor of music degree in piano performance. And when I was in university, I was teaching actually as part of a program that the university offered. And another thing they offered was musicians for events in the community. So I sort of just ended up saying yes to some of those gigs as they came along. So I sort of started to become known as the person who would take those kind of background music gigs, if you will. So sometimes they would be at a country club, or maybe not even for a wedding, but just background music for a Christmas party or any sort of thing like that. So I started to sort of say yes to those. In different communities, I was in a worship band as well. So some of the friends there were getting married and sort of asked me to play. So I would say, having done some of those, I was realizing that I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed performing in that kind of setting rather than sort of being the center of attention, which was a lot of my degree as a performer was to give a recital, usually a big recital at the end of each year. And while I enjoyed that, it was a lot of stress. And so to do these sort of things, I found very stress-free in a way that I could sort of sit, choose my program, play, and then people would come up and just sort of appreciate me, and I could make, you know, a decent amount of money for almost practicing, I felt like, when I was in university, just sitting and practicing. So I thought, maybe I should build a website and start actively seeking these kind of engagements. So I did build my website my final year of university. Got a photographer friend to take photos and just sort of started exploring how to do that and making a brand. And so then I was actually in Winnipeg, Canada. I don't know if you're familiar with
that. I've heard of it, but I don't know where it is.
Heard of it? It's a bit of a smaller city. So I was in Winnipeg. I got maybe, I would say, a handful of weddings for my website, but nothing really major. And then I decided to move to Toronto, which is a huge metropolis center, and just changing my location SEO actually made the inquiries jump up quite a bit. So that was the sign. And I'll actually tell you a story. When I was in the car, in the moving car, driving from Winnipeg to Toronto, I actually got like two or three inquiries on my way just from changing that location. And that was a really good sign that I could start doing it as more of a business and instead of just sort of a one-time thing here and there.
So now some people would have heard you say change location SEO. Now you better explain on what on earth that means.
Right. So advertising is a big part of this. You have to sort of be able to reach out to couples, engaged couples that are looking for music for their wedding specifically. So think about, if you were looking for music for your wedding, what would you do? You would probably go to Google, right? Google wedding pianist Toronto or whatever. And usually the location is part of that. So in putting that, specifically that key phrase of wedding pianist Toronto versus wedding pianist Winnipeg, really changed things because a lot more people were looking for that location.
Oh, I see. Yes. So you run Google AdWords? Or are you just talking about your blog's SEO or your website's SEO?
Just Just the SEO of the website itself. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's huge. So literally you had a page on your website, which had piano lessons, Winnipeg, and you had optimized that to be found by Google. And this is called search engine optimization. And then when you realized you were moving, you changed that to Toronto and suddenly Google re-indexed you and suddenly lots more people contacted you. How very interesting. Just a reminder to all of us of the importance of getting the page titles and those meta tags, what's called meta tags, which is information that Google can read that's in your page to help it find the right thing. So yeah, that's a really great tip. And how many weddings would you cover a year now, Liz?
So it's grown every year. The year I moved to Toronto was 2013, and that's sort of when I built my website and started. And that year I did about 30. And it's grown to last year, 2018, I played over 100 weddings and events.
Wow.
So yes, wow. So it's really my weekend job, I like to say.
So there'd be a couple a weekend or two or three even sometimes now.
So yeah, that'll work out. So if you think of 100 and there's about 52 weeks in a year, an average of two a weekend. Now, usually in the summer, I might have five or six on a weekend actually.
Yeah.
And then, you know, January, it's maybe a little bit slower or whatever. So. It's pretty full time.
Yeah, very much. That combined with your 4 afternoons a week, I can imagine you're pretty busy.
Yep. But I mean, I really love it. I love teaching piano. I love playing piano. And I think the two complement each other really well. I'm glad I have sort of those two aspects to my career that I've been able to develop.
And I'd like to go back to an earlier point you made about the playing that you're doing is performing, but it's not the traditional classical recital, which I know scares the crap out of a lot of people, including myself. I don't want to go and sit on a stage in a bow tie and try and play a Chopin etude and not make a mistake. Like, it's just not what I enjoy. I'd love to play it for myself, but not when people are watching. That's just not me. And I know a lot of teachers out there would be in that same boat of wanting to play more for themselves. And perhaps this is a potential outlet for them. So I want people to keep that in mind as we listen to Liz, that this could be a way not only of making some extra income on the side, but actually just keeping your own passion for piano playing going. Have you found that that's been a help in that regard?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I was the same as you. When I was really focused on classical music and in university, it was sort of because I felt like that was the next step for me, but I really didn't so much enjoy giving the huge recitals and having to memorize, you know, 70 minutes of music and perform it really flawlessly and have that perfectionism sort of behind me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I went through that to really get my technique up and everything. And I do teach classical as well. So I really think it's important. But having said that, I would always play, you know, pop music for myself for fun. I played for choirs and I liked sort of a variety of genres of music. So this gives me a chance to perform actually quite a big variety of genres in not so much of a pressured way. Of course, if it's someone's wedding, you don't want to screw up, but at the same time, you can have fun with it and it can be things that you can feel very polished you know, it's pop music, so you can feel like you can take your own flair with it. It doesn't have to be only one way.
I agree. And so what percentage, if you're happy to say, of your annual income now is weddings versus piano teaching?
Yes. So I recently sort of finished up my taxes. So I actually have a pretty good idea now. It's about 60-40. So 60 on teaching and about 40% weddings.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh, that's great. So let's take us through a wedding and what you actually do. Because I've been asked to play for friends' weddings before, but it's really just been a song here or there during the signing of the registry or whatever it is. I imagine you might provide more of a full service. Would that be right?
I really open it up to what the couples are looking for. The bulk of what I do is the wedding ceremony itself, just because that's sort of well suited to solo piano or instrumental. So what that typically involves is about 20 or 30 minutes of music as the guests arrive. So that's the prelude music. Usually that's sort of my choice. I sort of have a list in my iPad of about 30 songs that I can pick and choose, you know, sort of light, romantic type of pieces. Mm-hmm. And then usually as the bridal party couple are walking in, one or two songs for the processional, one for the signing of the registry and one for the recessional when they walk back out.
Right.
So I would say overall it's maybe about 10-15 songs, including the prelude music. and up to maybe an hour that I'll be booked for that. I do also offer music for the cocktail hour and dinner if they're looking to continue that into the evening. I'm very happy to do that. So I have sort of a jazzy lounge style playlist that I will offer for the cocktail hour if they're looking for that. Dinner music if they're looking for that. Most couples are looking for perhaps a band or a DJ for more of the later evening, like the dance, if they want to have a dance floor and that kind of thing. You know, I can only go so upbeat.
Yeah.
sort of usually the earlier part of the wedding is when they're looking for solo instrumental, solo piano.
And do you tend to have a pretty set fee for that service? Here's a wedding ceremony, start to finish, I'll be there. Here's the fee I charge.
Pretty much. I have an hourly fee. Sometimes they might want an hour and a half, especially if it's like a Catholic wedding ceremony. Those tend to go a little longer and be a little bit more involved. So I tend to go by the hour and also the location. So if they're looking for a venue in, say, Niagara Falls, which is about an hour and a half out, which I do go. I have to add my travel time. An extra fee for that. So it does depend on sort of my time and also location of the venue.
And do you find you need to take your own equipment quite often? Like, do you have a good keyboard to bring and that sort of thing?
Yes. So when I started out, I didn't have a digital piano. I was really limited to venues that already had a piano on site. And unfortunately, there's less and less that will, because of the maintenance that's involved. And they don't want the liability of having, you know, an expensive grand piano where everyone's drinking and everything like that. So a lot of venues today do not have a piano on site. So I have to bring in my own. I have a digital Yamaha piano, the full 88 keys, weighted keys, but it's very portable as well. So I have a stand, just an X stand that I can put the keyboard onto. I have a keyboard amp as well that I use, especially if it's an outdoor wedding, just to make sure that it's projecting. But that's mainly all I need. It's very self-contained, the whole setup. So,
and having played outdoor gigs before, probably some pegs for your music, or do you do it all on iPad, in fact?
Well, in fact, I do. I haven't used paper music in about 5 years.
Right.
So it was just a hassle. And again, when I first started this, the first year, I went through a lot of these changes of really not liking paper music for several reasons. Page turns were an issue. You know, you have an hour of music. You can't necessarily, you know, bring all your books and binders. So I scanned everything in. I only use Fourscore app on my iPad for all my music all the time.
Oh, is that too? Yeah. Do you have a Bluetooth page turner?
I do. That's my other main thing that I always bring with me is my AirTurn. So yeah, it's a savior. And actually, a lot of people that come up to me and they'll say, "Oh, that's so beautiful what you're playing. Oh, how are you doing that? How are the pages turning? Yeah, oh, you're like using magic. An iPad." So
yeah,
technology. People are really, really excited to see that too.
And your Yamaha keyboard. Do you know the model number or model of that?
I think it's discontinued now, actually. Okay. I think it's a P35.
Okay, something. So it's got speakers in it, but yeah, it's good to have the extra amplification.
Yeah, and I don't always use the amp. So sometimes they do have speakers on site or a DJ on site that I can plug into their system. So it's good to have, you know, a few options for that, and just to be flexible with what the venue's providing and what the couples are looking for.
And you'd also need to book in a rehearsal with everyone too. So it's not just the gig, right?
Well, having said that, and since I'm doing wedding ceremonies, I've really gotten into a good groove of sort of knowing what to expect. So I often actually don't rehearse at all with the couples. A lot of times I'm meeting with them the first time on their wedding day.
Right.
Just because they've found me online, they've, you know, seen my reviews, they trusted that I could perform this for them. They'll usually send me their song selections and we'll go back and forth by email. And then I show up on the day and away we go. So,
right. So, I mean, because they'll have a rehearsal in the church anyway. So, and they say, okay, this is where Liz is going to do this piece. And then you don't need to be there, which is a great relief for you, I'm sure.
I don't need to be there. I have done several rehearsals if they really want me, but then it's an extra fee for them because that's still my time. And so it almost doubles the fee if they want to have me for their rehearsal.
Yep. Yeah, it makes sense. So look, you must have to learn a lot of music pretty quickly, which either means you're a good shortcutter, perhaps like me, and knows how to play lead sheets and chords, or you're a really good sight reader, or maybe a bit of both. So tell us how you learn, because I imagine people just say, hey, I want to play some X song X, and you're like, I've got no idea what that is. I better learn it.
Right. No, that happens all the time. I emphasize to the couples that I am very open to requests. So I like to get, you know, their feedback of what they want to hear. I think I'm very much like you. I think about music with a strong emphasis on chords and structure. So when I'm listening to a piece of music, a new pop piece, I'll quickly get, okay, it's the same four chords over and over, or, you know, I'll look up the chords on Ultimate Guitar Tabs. Or I'll look up maybe on musicnotes.com, see what arrangements are there, and just sort of quickly pull something together. I often make my own lead sheets as well for pop music, just because then I can have everything on one page. I can, you know, figure out the melody, the verse, the chorus, and just sort of cover that. So in a way, it's a shortcut, but I also like getting the full arrangements and then reading those, or sort of reading around the notes.
Using it as a guide, which is what I tend
to do. Yeah. So,
but it gives you a good idea of the style, doesn't it?
For sure. And so the couples are quite happy when I say, yep, no problem, I can learn that for you. And I can put it together fairly quickly.
That's great. Well, you would have to, otherwise you'd be spending hours and hours of unpaid time preparing for all the hour that you do. That would be an important consideration for people who are interested in doing this. You need to be able to pick up music pretty quickly, and be quite flexible too, because I'm sure there's plenty of times I've played for a lot of services at schools before, church services, where it's just like, you know, people give you this kind of symbol. I'm doing like a circle in the air. It's like, just keep playing, play stuff, play something, fill this gap. So you've got to be flexible like that too, don't you? Just to be able to fill space.
Exactly. That's really it. And especially during a ceremony, you know, you don't know how long they're going to walk. You don't know how fast they're going to walk in. You know, they might pause. Maybe the ring boy, you know, gets stuck halfway down the aisle and you have to just keep going. You just have to really go with the flow. And when they get to the front of the aisle, you always have to sort of cadence there nicely. So you have to always be on your toes, and really be able to improvise and play around with the music that you're working with.
Do you ever play or offer to play an organ if there is one?
I haven't ventured so far, actually. I'm a little leery. I've never played organ before, and I feel like I might accidentally, you know, turn on a weird stop or something. So I haven't ever done that. But I mean, at some point, if someone really wanted, I suppose I could try. I probably would want to have the rehearsal then, though.
Yes, definitely agree.
Yes.
And what about backing tracks? Do you use any apps or musical backing tracks when you're playing?
So it's something I've thought of, and there is some other vendors, some other musicians I've seen who do use it for, especially cocktail hours, having that. It's something I use with my students a lot, but I haven't found a way to do it authentically for myself when I perform. And especially for wedding ceremonies, it's a bit tricky because, like we just talked about, you have to sort of stop and start when the time is right. And so having to control a backing track and your own playing, it would be a little bit much. So yeah. I haven't really used them in my own performance, but I could see the value, especially for jazz style, you know, for the cocktail hours.
Yeah, definitely. And so what about some of the benefits? I mean, obviously this is a great income stream for you, and we've talked about how it keeps your excitement and passion for playing, but what about benefits to your teaching, and maybe flow on benefits to your students? Have you seen anything, or could you make that connection?
Definitely, yes. So as I mentioned, the couples are always sort of giving me new requests and music that I may not have heard yet that is becoming popular. So it really keeps me familiar with new music that my students also are really familiar with. I know that's something that you talk about a lot, is being really, really well-versed in the new, you know, pop hits that are coming out, you know, this week or last week, not necessarily just like the Beatles as a pop music, you know.
Right.
And also because I've had to improvise a lot and be comfortable, you know, cutting, pasting here and there, I like to give my students the chance to try that and to build that skill. Also, ensemble playing I do a little bit as well. So I also play with some string players, violinists, cellists, and I have a few different singers that I work with. And so I've gotten to meet those musicians and kind of introduce me to other musicians. And I haven't quite done this yet, but I'm thinking of ways to bring my students in and maybe get some ensemble playing opportunities with their students, maybe, you know, because we often have to put things together quickly as well. So say they're requesting piano guys, for example, we'll learn that really quickly or you know, those kind of things. So the ensemble playing is huge too. I'm thinking of perhaps, you know, improv and courting activities that I might come up with if I'm learning a new piece, you know, if I'm thinking, oh, this would be really quite easy to learn. There's only three chords or something. I have a new quick study for someone. So it really just kind of keeps me going in terms of new music. And I always like giving my students new opportunities to look at all kinds of repertoire. So. Mm.
Yeah, that's great. And I think a lot of the ways in which I teach and coming from that chord-based background is part of my own experience of accompanying choirs and accompanying stage musicals and those kinds of experiences. They do give you more and more skills that you can then pass on to your students. So when they come in with that crazy, ridiculous arrangement, you can actually just take a deep breath and go, yeah, I can deal with this. This is cool. This is because this is what I do myself.
Yes, and I love when my students request new pieces to learn too, because then I always love looking at, you know, what is that music? I want to learn it. I want to find a good arrangement. Maybe with my students, we can make our own arrangement. And I really like encouraging them to be able to do that too, because then they learn so much about chords, theory, transcribing. There's so many skills that go into doing that just based on their one interest of learning a piece. And I find that that really motivates them too.
Mm, yeah. And I don't know about you, Liz, but I discourage teachers who I work with from going away and creating this fabulous arrangement of a song that a student wants to learn because they miss all of what you've just said, that the student can actually, by seeing you in action, yes, it does take a bit more time during the lesson, but they can actually see how you would try and play this thing that's too hard for even us to play, and they can learn from that. Do you take that approach if you have time?
Definitely, if I have time. I mean, depending on the student, if they're really little, I might just, you know, transcribe the melody for them if it depends what they can handle. If they're a teenager, I'd encourage them to really even go and do that by themselves and see what they can come up with, you know. So depending on what you're looking for that student, at what stage they are in their development, you know, I think they can learn something from the process of doing that, definitely.
My Music Staff is the easiest and most efficient way to run your music teaching business. This complete business-in-a-box solution has it all. I've even written a blog post on how I personally used My Music Staff to transition to automatic monthly payments. All my students now receive a monthly automatic invoice and their credit cards are charged instantly. It couldn't be easier. From a single teacher studio to multi-teacher schools, it has you covered. It will help you effortlessly manage your students, scheduling, billing, and more. It works on any device, so you're always well-informed and in control of your business, even on the go. My Music Staff will allow you to focus more on your clients instead of being consumed by overwhelming and time-consuming administrative tasks. My Music Staff can also be used as a tool to connect your students and parents outside of their weekly lesson. Not only does it allow students to notify you of any upcoming absences and even reschedule missed lessons, it's also a great way to keep your students engaged and learning outside of their time with you. You can leave lesson notes to guide their practice, assign new repertoire, and even upload content like video tutorials, audio, sheet music, and more. This immersive tool is a great addition to any studio looking to improve their business and set themselves apart from the competition. Use My Music Staff to add additional value to your lessons and help you stand out from the crowd. There's no better time to try it for yourself. Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial. It's the perfect tool to navigate your studio through the busy back-to-school season. And for teachers who are listening who might be thinking, well, maybe I could do this, or I already do this a little bit, maybe it could become more of a business for me. What would you say makes a good wedding musician? What are some of those skills or features of a good wedding musician?
Yes. So like we've sort of mentioned, it's just that idea of being flexible. So you can't really go in and say, I only play these 10 pieces and I only play them start to finish. You know, you really can't. You have to be flexible in the type of music you're playing, in starting and stopping and improvising. You have to be really organized. because, you know, this is someone's wedding. It's, there's only really one chance to do it well. You know, it, you have to be, have a high standard for yourself to pull it off well. And to be organized when you're speaking to the couples, right? If the business starts when they sort of reach out to you as an inquiry, you have to get back to them quickly. You have to have a sense of, you know, they have to have a sense that you're the expert and that they can, you can guide them through booking this part of their wedding. What's interesting about the industry too is a lot of the, well, everyone who's booking things for their wedding, usually it's their first time doing that. It's a, sort of a one-time thing in your life to book, you know, vendors for your wedding. So you have to sort of lead them with your expertise. You have to know when they'll need music for, you know, the type of venue they're at, how, what the process will be, setting up and everything. And that comes with time. It comes with experience, but you have to sort of be on top of all of that and have a love of the people that you're working with and what you're doing and what you're offering them, because often what will happen is afterwards they'll say, wow, the music really made it come to life for me. And this is a, you know, an amazing time in their life. That 1 hour, that wedding ceremony, they're going to remember that for their whole life. And if you can elevate the emotion with your music, it's really, it's so special. So I really enjoy that part of it too. Just, they're so appreciative of what you've done, what you've brought to the table. So you have to sort of be willing to put their needs above your own and just do the best you can to make their day really, really special.
I think that's right. It's all about them, not you. So it, while you can put a framework out there and say, well, hey, you're going to need something at the beginning and here are three choices I've used before, which people love, it's really up to them. And if they want some AC/DC to come into the chapel with, then you try and play it.
Yeah, you have to be pretty open. Having said that though, sometimes they have really interesting ideas for the music that, you know, might not sound great on piano, even, you know, just based on what type of piece it is. So also being able, I've kind of learned this as I went, is sort of guiding them gently to what the best option would be if they have a really out there request.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
don't feel like you have to just go with anything they say, you know, but still be really open to what they're looking for in their vision.
You mentioned organization being vital. Have you got any tips or any tools that you perhaps use to make sure you keep organized? Because I imagine you have a lot of dates going through your head at any one time.
Right. So I'm lucky that I do like organizing. I like being, you know, efficient with my time. So I have several sort of avenues that the inquiries can come through. So I have my website where they can fill out a booking form. I'm also on several wedding directories. So for example, the knot.com or weddingwire.com, we use a lot in Canada and the US. So they can send me messages through all of these different platforms. They can send me messages through my Instagram page or my Facebook page. So I have sort of a spreadsheet where I record as soon as I get an inquiry, what's their wedding date, or if it's not a wedding, maybe it's a corporate event, what's the event, who's the contact person, how did they find me, and then what stage am I at? So I'm at the stage where I gave them a quote, am I waiting for more information, am I at the stage of giving them a contract? So I have a whole step-by-step process that I use to track all of these events, because you're right, there's multiple that I'm booking at the same time, and a lot of them are 1-2 years in advance. I'm already looking at 2020. Yes. So you can't sort of, and you have to have it in your calendar. You have to have double, triple checked all of these things because you cannot miss a wedding, right?
Right.
You can't.
Right.
You have to be so on top of it. So I have a long sort of step-by-step process from inquiry to follow-up. So what, also once I'm done the wedding, I have a whole checklist of follow-up questions. You know, I'd like a review from them. I'd like maybe the, some of the photos that the photographers were taking so I can use them. I want them to follow my Instagram, so I want to keep that going. I want to also know all the vendors that were involved, the wedding planner, the officiant, the minister, and photographers, so we can always keep track of, you know, who's using who for which wedding, and really network from there. So there's a lot that goes into it.
And I bet when you did your first few, you didn't have any of these systems in place. So I just want to mention to everyone out there,
Liz has been doing this
since 2013. So don't freak out that she sounds like she's got everything done already.
You're right. I really learned by doing. There wasn't really anyone who taught me how to be a wedding pianist. I really just sort of looked at what was out there. And I have to mention too, not a lot of solo instrumentalists advertise for weddings. It is a niche that I think more people could get into and have success, because There's a lot of DJs that are out there for weddings. There's a lot of bands. There's not a lot of solo instrumental that advertise, especially for wedding ceremonies. It's sort of a neglected, at least in my area, market that I was able to capitalize on. So I found that sort of niche and really tried to advertise heavily in that in that area.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your advertising. You've mentioned your website. You've mentioned Instagram. Mm-hmm. What paid and organic, so free marketing, do you use? What channels do you use?
Yes. So the website was the first, and definitely optimizing the SEO was sort of how I got started. Then what I did was I Googled, you know, wedding pianist in my area and looked at all the links that were coming up. So a lot of them weren't actually individuals. A lot of them were directories like the knot.com or WeddingWire or other wedding sites. So I wanted to make sure I was on all of those. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of my first step. And many of them have free listings that you can get started with and then upgrade from there. So
is the first one you're mentioning the knot, as in K-N-O-T?
The knot. As in K-N-O-T, yes, like yeah, tying the knot.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so they're huge, at least in North America, they're huge. And actually, I was lucky to win their bestofthenot.com for wedding music this past year.
I did see that on your website or somewhere, and I wondered, what on earth is the knot? There you go.
The knot, yes. So that's basically based on reviews. So if your couples are reviewing you after every wedding, then you're going to be up there in terms of having, you know, a lot of five-star reviews. And then those kind of things help a lot with your advertising. You look like you're the expert in that. Area. So I do have a paid listing there, but I'm on some of the other directories. I have still just a free listing, just to kind of keep my name in there. So I talked about seeing sort of what the competition was and then strategically placing myself there. Here's another thing I did. So initially I just thought I should just reach out to all the wedding industry people that I can find. So I looked at lists of venues, wedding planners, etc. And I'm talking hundreds of emails I sent out, just cold emailed, you know, tons of people saying, I'm just starting out. I'm a pianist. I can do this for wedding ceremonies, for cocktail hours, dinners, and gave them a link to my website. And, you know, because I sent out so many, a lot didn't respond, right? But, you know, even if 10%, 5% responded, I did get quite a few referrals from that. And sometimes became on their preferred vendor list. If you try to get into these preferred vendor lists, then you know these wedding planners have a list of, okay, these are the musicians that I recommend, these are the florists that I recommend, and etc. So the more of those that you're on, the more it sort of snowballs.
I remember using those for my own wedding, because once you've chosen your event planner or your venue, and you and you believe in them and you trust them, then whoever they recommend, it's like, well, I'm not going to go searching. I'll use them.
Exactly. So that's why having Google, but also having those sort of connections within the wedding industry and being friends with other vendors so that you can recommend them, they can recommend you, is really, really important. And also, as I mentioned, at the actual event, I will always kind of reach out to who's there and we'll exchange Instagram. And that's a big thing in weddings is Instagram. I used to give out business cards. I still do, but a lot of time they're saying, I'm going to lose that. Just give me your Instagram tag. So it's huge for weddings. And then you want to tag, you know, all the vendors that worked on that wedding in your photos and vice versa. And it just sort of grows from there. And then last thing I'll say is if you are with a venue, if you sort of get to that stage where you're with a venue, often they have a wedding open house. So you get a chance to perform maybe for the evening, and then maybe 30, 40 couples will come up to you and be actively looking for your services. So you can get a lot of leads in one night.
Right. It's like an open day for a school. Everyone comes and has a look at the plans. Right. There you go.
So they'll have, so they'll have the decor set up different decor, maybe dresses, you know, all the different vendors. And if it's a venue that has you, you'll probably be the music in one area at least, so that you can sort of, you know, talk directly with the couples that are looking.
That's great. Well, really good tips. Mm-hmm. There you go. I'm learning lots, Liz. What do you think the hardest thing about creating this new income stream for your business has been?
So I would say because weddings are really unique because they're only really on weekends, and the couples or the clients, it's a one-time thing. So there's no sort of recurring revenue. from that one booking, right? Unless they always give you a referral, you have to be constantly advertising to new engaged couples. So there's that limiting thing there. And also because it's only on weekends, you know, if all of your Saturdays are booked and, you know, all your Sundays and Fridays, that's sort of as much as you can really do. It's not unlimited in terms of your time that you can be booked.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a cap on it a little bit.
And putting my entrepreneurial hat on, I was wondering, well, could Liz hire another piano teacher who is good at this that could take on some of her her events and then build a bit more of a business, because you could then do multiple streams at the same time, sort of thing. Have you thought about that, or is that a bit way out?
Well, it's good you mentioned that, because last year doing the 100 events, I was pretty much maxed out. And even for my own energy level, that was a lot. So I did have to, sometimes when I had a double booking, I'd have to look for, you know, other piano teachers in my, I'm very active in my registered music teachers group. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a few of us that I could reach out to. And I've had some sub in. Now, I haven't really taken a cut of that because they're my friends.
Yeah.
But you're right that I do have some, you know, that I could maybe build in to that. That could be a next step. There is some other wedding vendors and things that I know. There's a group of officiants that I know that have expanded to other cities, which is another sort of bigger, you know, step to conquer. But I feel with that, my worry is just sort of quality control. That's my that's my biggest worry is, you know, I really want to stand behind all of the music I'm putting out there. And then I also want to really make sure that if I'm hiring another person in my place, that they can live up to that as well. But it's definitely an idea going
forward. Yeah. Well, I mean, it just sounds like it's got momentum already. It's obviously going really well. You enjoy it. It'd be interesting to see what the future holds for you, Liz. So thanks for sharing that. I wonder whether, would you be comfortable sharing a couple of mistakes that you've made along the way that perhaps you could stop other teachers making if they want to?
Of course. Yeah. I think definitely starting out, I sort of assumed a lot of things. I assumed, oh, I'm just coming in to play the music. You know, everything else will be sorted out. I'll just have to, you know, look for the cues. So I guess as I moved on with this, I realized not to assume anything and just really be over-prepared, because it is an important, well, it's a really important day for the couples, and you really want to make sure that you are on point with everything, that all of the vendors know what the other person is doing, especially the minister when it comes to the ceremony, to make sure you're on the same page. I always want to make sure I connect with them. I want to make sure I have an on-site contact. I have sort of a growing list of questions that I always want to ask before the day, so that on the day we're not stuck, oh, there's no power where I'm supposed to plug in, or you know, any other thing like that. I try to think of all of the eventualities, especially if I'm at a new venue, and really ask and double check ahead of time is a huge thing. Another thought is always to have a contract in place and always take a deposit to confirm the booking. Because initially when I started, you know, someone emails me and I say, great, I'm available. And then we'll start, you know, talking about music and all kinds of things. But then, you know, it'll fall through. And so I've kind of spent a lot of time with them, but they weren't actually willing to commit. So you have to be wary of people who are sort of shopping around and maybe they aren't serious. So I really like to just say, okay, this is what I can offer. Let me know if you want to move forward with booking. And then I have a 50% deposit, which is pretty standard in wedding industry. So once I have that in the bank, and I have their signature, then we can move forward with all of their other questions.
Great. Really sensible. Really sensible.
Yeah, just to make sure I'm covered. I mean, I've had cases where I've said that to couples and then they'll take their time. And then I'll get another couple who wants to book for that day. So unfortunately, they sort of missed the boat. And I'll have to just tell them, sorry, but I've been booked as well by another person. So just being really upfront and really professional is a way to sort of gain the couple's trust, stay in touch with them. And the other thing I kind of mentioned a little bit before is just know that the customer isn't always right all the time. Like, it's okay to say no and sort of gently guide them away from from maybe bad ideas, and just work with them. Work with them, because initially you might want to just say yes to everything, but it's helpful, you know, just to, for your own sanity and own professionalism, just to kind of know your own boundaries.
Yeah, good point. With your so on your contract, because you said you don't do it by the wedding price as much as by the hours it will take you to do it. So do you estimate on your contract, look, this wedding's going to take me 5 hours, therefore the cost up front, the 50% deposit is 2.5 hours worth of my time, sort of thing?
Basically, yeah. So I've once we get to that point, I know sort of how many hours they're looking for and if they want rehearsal, and I'll just bundle that all in and then I'll have a final price, and then the deposit is just 50% of that price directly.
Right. Yeah. Is it not, do other suppliers do a fixed fee? Like, you want me for your wedding, it's $1,000 sort of thing?
I would say not so much, just because there's a lot of usually add-ons, and it depends on what the venue is and what they're looking for. So a lot of wedding professionals like to have almost like three packages at least, sort of like beginning, middle, and all the works.
Right.
So I would say not to have too much of a fixed price. Really, like, look, see what they're looking for. And I just did a webinar with the Knot actually that was talking about pricing down. So don't give them your cheapest price first. Give them sort of your full package price, and then you can take out things and then get it to a place where they're happy.
Yeah, good tip. And did you get a lawyer to help with your contract, or is that something that you put together?
I sort of did some research online and I found a good template, and I've kind of been tweaking it since, but I've actually had some lawyers as clients. So whenever I have a lawyer getting married, I just kind of ask them, oh, so what did you think of my contract? Is it like, okay? And,
clever.
And so I'll get some free consulting advice there. No, but they've always said it looks pretty good. And it's only one page too. I don't want to overburden them with too much information. So it's one page of pretty, you know, basic items. And then I have a rider as well. So it's like a two page, I guess.
And a rider is a list of things that you require. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So on there, I have things like, you know, if there is a piano on site, I like it to be tuned at least within 6 months of the day, which I think is pretty, I have to put that in there because
a lot of,
usually, and the reason I put that in is also just sort of to remind them to check with the venue. Has it been tuned? Even just that. Has it been tuned?
Is it still there? Does it open? Is there a key?
Yeah. Well, having said that, there's been some really scary pianos I've seen, Tim, like at these big halls where we're able to open, but maybe there's no, you know, music stand for me to put my iPad on, or I've been to a piano with actually no pedals. So there was absolutely no pedals. And I actually had to play a Christmas party with no pedals for, I think, 3 hours.
No, oh, that would have been awful.
So, I mean, what can you do? At that point, you're there. So, you know, I just had to really, you know, perfect my Legato.
That's when you add that to your contract or your list. Check pedals.
Must have pedals. Yeah, I know. It's as you go, you keep adding more and more. And then for being outdoors, and especially when I'm playing with string players, we want to make sure that we have adequate coverage, you know, from sun and rain, from sun as well, especially for string players. And I need power, you know, within sort of 50 feet. So those kind of things, just to kind of keep those in mind. Again, the couples, this is their first time probably booking a pianist, probably in their life. So just giving them all the things to check and think about. But otherwise I don't have too much on there. It's just sort of my basic requirements. I don't want to scare them with, you know, 20, 30 things. It's just my basic requirements. So.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, that has been the most interesting conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I'm not looking to do weddings myself, but I've done a fair few of them. And so I totally understand these questions and the rubbish pianos I've had to play and keyboards falling over and pages blowing off. And so I totally understand it. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you think is important that we didn't get to today?
You know, I think we've covered a lot. I guess if anyone wants to know about sort of my iPad and music, how that works, because a lot of people always ask about that. So basically I mentioned the Fourscore app. So I've had that, I've used that, that's very reliable. And I just have kind of tracked my sheet music. So I import it all, I scan it in, or I'll most likely these days I will find it online, a PDF, from musicnotes.com or something and just directly put it in. And then it's great because you can do set lists and you can just have your music all going from one to the next. You can annotate. So I'll be, you know, playing with the violinist and say, okay, we're going to cut the intro. We're going to start here and we'll just quickly write that in. So that's been really my main plan in terms of using the sheet music. It really works for all kinds of genres of music and in every situation it works. It also has the brightness, right? So you don't need your own lamp or anything in a dark space. Sometimes if I'm playing for a dinner, it's really, really dark. And so that's really helpful.
Four score is my favorite as well. Yes. Go on.
I was just going to say, sometimes that can be the hurdle. Some of my friends who are thinking of getting into this, they just don't want to have to go through all of their music. Like maybe they have, you know, shelves and shelves of music and have to scan it all in. But I would just say it is worth it. And start with the first wedding, just scan in that music and then go to the next and scan in some more. And eventually you'll get a nice list in there going. So it's really, really worth it. It cuts down on so many issues. There's no paper blowing. You know, it's there. It'll always work. Just make sure you have it charged up and ready to go. So
yeah. And what size iPad do you have? Have you got the big Pro?
I don't have the Pro. It's actually a pretty old iPad. It is just the original size, so not the mini size. It's kind of before mini came out. So, and it's been reliable as well. I've had it for about 5-6 years, and it's been great.
There you go. So you don't even need to spend thousands on the big one.
I think I also bought it refurbished or something. So it wasn't even too much out of the gate to invest. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. Well, that's been so good to hang out with you. Thanks so much, Liz, for sharing all your insights. You've given away all of your special insider knowledge, which I love. Right. Where can people find out more about you? You better give us your Instagram and your webpage, at least website.
Yes. So will you have that down links on the bottom maybe of the
We'll pop it in our show notes. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So my website's probably the main place to go, which is lizcraig.ca. And then I have all the social media as well. And it's just at Liz Craig Pianist. So you can follow along with my adventures. I try to post for every wedding that I do, even if it's just one picture or two, just to get a sense of what it looked like and, you know, any special moments that happened. I find couples really like that too, just being able to see all the different weddings you've been part of.
That's great. Fantastic. Well, look, I'll let you get on with your day. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm glad I could enlighten you and your listeners.
Absolutely. I know a lot of people, the cogs will be turning in their heads going, oh, I reckon I could do this. Hopefully we've inspired some people. Thanks so much, Liz.
I hope so. Yes. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's interview with the fabulous Liz Craig. She's an absolute superstar, and it was just wonderful unpacking what could be another good idea for those of you who are looking for a little bit of extra income without doing more teaching. Next week on the podcast, we have a teacher that many of you will recognize from online. If you're in any Facebook groups, my guest is a regular contributor and really helpful in answering people's questions. And next week's episode, he's going to be unpacking about how he has made recitals come alive using technology. He's got this amazing program where once a year he runs these amazing interactive multimedia recitals, which all his students are involved in, and they are really quite amazing. And we're going to unpack what he does, how he's done it, and what you would need to do if you want to try it out yourself. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you next week. Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle piano teaching community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams, whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the inner circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.